Hi, so I'm sitting here at the head offices of Frontier Economics with their chairman, Lord Gus O'Donnell. Gus was head of the UK Civil Service and cabinet secretary to three prime ministers, so I can think of no one better to try and talk to and get some understanding of some of the policy issues involved with the 100-year life. So, Gus, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. I wondered, you know, from your perspective, what you thought some of the more important policy issues that arose from longevity in the 100-year life that governments have to face.
Right, I think there's a huge agenda for government here, but you have to understand, for government to be able to implement policies, some of them which will be quite difficult, they need the support of population. So the first thing I would tackle is the culture. We need to get across to people that this is a positive. At the moment, ageing is generally handled in policy circles by talking about pensions and about problems, about the increased health costs and all those sorts of things. Nobody's taking the positive attitude of, actually, this is a great opportunity. We have a lot more experienced people out there who are going to do more with their lives. How do we help them achieve that? And I think, so the first point would be getting that across to people. And that, I think, the boring issue of statistics is quite important there. We need to get across to people that, first of all, the 100-year life is real. So the point that you make about cohort life expectancy is hugely important. So getting people into that mindset, that which they're not at the minute. I don't think they're there yet. Secondly, I think those, when you look at the age classifications, you know, we have a classification of 64 plus. Everybody's old. Now, I feel personally quite taken by this, because this year I will enter that category, and that I don't feel old. I don't feel that I'm suffering physically or mentally even. And I mean, my big story on this is 20 years ago, I remember going to the House of Commons gym. I've been training very hard. I had my assessment. And the trainer, I thought, was going to come up to me and say, congratulations, you're improving. And what she said was, it's exactly the same. And I was pretty disappointed. And she said, Mr. O'Donnell, at your age, it's all about managing decline. So I think she needed a few lessons in motivation. But it was, it kind of said it all to me, that actually you hit a period of stability, and you want that period of stability to last for a long time. And it can.
Very interesting. I agree about the government and making sure people are aware of this, that, you know, there are those two measures of life expectancy, and the one the government focuses on, the period one, has reliably underestimated life expectancy for 50, 60 years. Amazing to rely upon, and almost hiding good news from people. You know, it's a great opportunity. Yeah. Great news, you can live for longer.
Exactly.
So it's extraordinary that that doesn't happen. So that's very interesting, that idea of shifting to a positive culture. In the book, we talk about this as a gift and not a curse, and I hope in some way the book can contribute to that. To what extent do you think governments are aware of these problems or challenges, the extent of the longevity, given their own forecasts underestimate what's happening?
Indeed. So I think your point is right. So this isn't built into the numbers. When you look at our long-term fiscal plans, I think they are based on estimates which will be shown to be biased for precisely the reasons you said. So I think this is somewhat unexpected. I think the way we are tackling it at the moment, very much focused on the negatives. It's all about how much more we're going to need in health. Isn't this a great problem? As opposed to, how do we help people give active, fulfilling lives for longer? And use that experience. I mean, I come back to the experience point, because there are some things in life that happen quite rarely. I mean, for me, you know, a coalition government coming in. Now, for rare events, you need people who've been around a long time. I looked around to see if there was someone, you know, from the past who could tell me, well, here's how I did it. And in fact, there was no one alive that did it. I think as we go to the future, and you talk about these four generations being around, more and more we'll be able to say, oh, yes, I've done that before. And as you know, all of us, the second time we do something, it's much, much better than the first time.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And, you know, there's the Isaac Newton quote about standing on the shoulders of giants, but if you're alive with the giants, all the better. Mm. There was a great piece of research I read the other day. They've got a great data set of 1.2 million people going back 2,000 years and looking at noticeable people who have made great achievements. And it seems to be increasing. And I wonder to what extent that is to do with longevity, because the more experience you've got, there should be a wisdom and more people to interact with.
Indeed. And I think that whole process of learning, and I think that's where it comes to, you asked about the policy things. For me, our education needs to be, at the moment, we tend to teach a skill set, which is the existing skill set, be it maths or science or whatever. What I think we need to do is teach people the skill of being able to update your skill set continuously. Mm-hmm. You know, and continuous professional development will be a part of this. But I think more than that, it's the ability of people to say, you take a classic job like an auditor, you know, a kind of middle income job. But actually, those sorts of jobs are going to be taken over by artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get this kind of hollowing out of the middle with lots of jobs where what you're after is personal interaction with humans. Mm-hmm. So that'll probably stay. And there'll be another set of jobs where you need creativity. You need to understand what is it that humans will want and need in the future in this kind of world that we're moving to. And I think that will require us to approach our education in a different way. You know, the old-fashioned way is you have a long, big slug of this, you know, up to age 21, whatever, and then you kind of deplete it through life. And I think we're going to have to swap that for a concept of, you know, swap your midlife crisis for your midlife university, as it were. You know, go off and retrain and catch up on the way the world's moved.
No, I agree, and you're beginning to see some nascent institutions or markets develop for that, although all in the private sector. And, you know, for me, when we look at the gift of a longer life, it does require change and transitions, which are challenging. That requires financial resources and personal resources to do those transitions. I suspect the wealthy and the well-educated have those resources, but I do worry about the inequality that's going to come from this.
Indeed, indeed. And I think the point you make in the book about that this increase in healthy lives is actually related to people who are relatively high income. And we are going to get an inequality, not just of income and wealth, but actually of healthy years, you know. And that is a pretty fundamental problem. And I think what's important there is you think about what's behind this increase in life is a lot of behavioural lifestyle issues. And, you know, we need to be careful that we actually address those lifestyle issues in a way that allows the whole of the population to achieve those goals, not just the richer groups. And I think that's about how do we get into schools good habits in terms of eating, exercise and the like, and keep them going through the years. And those richer groups, you know, as they go to, let's say, they finish doing their normal job and they're in their 60s and 70s, perfectly healthy, you know, what are they doing? Well, one of the things I'd like them to be doing is using that experience to help at both ends of the age spectrum, actually. Yeah. You know, you can imagine someone who's financially secure helping those in their 80s and 90s, where loneliness is a huge problem, who don't possibly have the financial resources they've got. Also, helping with the very young, you know, their fourth generation kids, you know, there'll be a lot of kind of babysitting activities.
Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting because we talk about the sandwich generation at the moment with three generations living, but we all see four generations in existence. So how we allocate those roles is interesting. And, you know, to carry on the pun, there's the club sandwich generation, and what that age group does, I think, is right to look after the very old or to take help with the younger generation. Now, you were cabinet secretary across three prime ministers. You know, one of the great things about the civil service is it's there to govern for the long run, to see that things happen. Politicians obviously have to focus on the electoral cycle. What are the challenges of such a long-lived agenda here, and how can we make it something that governments and policies
Absolutely.
Respond to?
I think the first thing is that governments, this is a two-way process. So governments respond when the public is demanding something. So, you know, I think that as people get to understand issues about obesity, for example, as people came to understand that smoking was bad for you, they were demanding of governments, and hence you were able to implement policies like putting the price of cigarettes up pretty dramatically. a regressive policy, and you see the same with the latest policy on sugar tax. Mm-hmm. You know, this people are attacking it because it's regressive, but actually, if you've got the understanding of there's a real problem here, it's either obesity or smoking or whatever, and we need to tackle it, then there are multiple ways of doing this. But you, as a government, you need to sort of get across, and I think where the civil service can help is, and your book helps enormously, start this process of people understanding the facts. And at the moment, that's not there. You know, people are, as you say, relatively short timescales. You know, we know this. As individuals, we are rather short-sighted. We overvalue the present compared to the future. We don't save enough for our old age. We don't think we're going to live that long. So we've got an individual problem. The government's got a problem that actually individuals that are like that aren't going to demand these long-run things. So we need basically to kick-start this process by saying, actually, let's look at the facts. Once you accept that these things are true, then let's start thinking about building a political support for the kinds of policies we will need.
No, and that, I think, probably part answers my last question, which is, you know, what's the relative role here for governments, corporates, and individuals?
Well, I think let's go to the corporate bit, because we haven't talked about that. I think corporates need to understand, again, there's great opportunities here. You've got a whole market out there of people who are living longer, who want to maintain a healthier lifestyle. So that creates all sorts of demands for, you know, gyms, for, you know, I think the area that will be the biggest will be those areas which combine healthy living with social interaction. Because I think, remember through this period, that there'll be a lot of people who end up being lonely because their partner for life will have died. And they're carrying on possibly for quite some time. Yeah. So social interaction is really important. And, you know, you can see it in the way that society's moving to generate, you know, bridge clubs, those sorts of things where people are thinking, I want mental stimulus, I want social interaction, but actually physically I may be capable of rather less than I was, you know. So it's may not be the running club, it may be, sure. And we need a range of these things. So I think once the private sector sees the profit opportunities in all of this, then standard market economics should mean they move in.
I certainly hope so, and I think you can see some signs of that already. It's interesting, I think the end of the 19th century, you saw a commercial leisure industry developed to make people make best use of the leisure. So we had recreation. I think we're seeing a new industry develop to help, not so much recreation, but recreation, help people invest and maintain their skill sets and their networks and their fitness. So.
Yes. I think the other point I'd say is there is a fundamental thing for individuals, because at the moment, if you look at what we're doing with our lives, we're working very hard. We're working long hours. The rich are working longer than hours than the poor. We're hiring in lots of people for childcare. So it's, you know, the reverse of what Keynes said we would do.
Yeah.
In fact, I think you can imagine a world where once you understand the length of your working life and the fact that it's going to change quite a lot, we could afford to devote more of our time. And I'm particularly, I think this is a message aimed at the men, when your children are younger, to actually play a bigger part in their education, which I think will be great for society as a whole, great for the men. And you know, where is this feeling, oh, my God, I can't afford that time because that's time lost on the greasy ladder or whatever. Yeah. Actually, you've got plenty of time, and that's a really interesting and useful experience you will gain, just as at the moment women do that with maternity leave. So we could, you know, enhance that period where you've got, you know, education, you start your life, your careers, then you've got a period where maybe you concentrate on young children. And you know, we know that those first 5 years are absolutely crucial, and the parent's role is absolutely crucial. Then you move back into a career. Maybe you move back in after doing some re-education. You know, you think about, you've moved on, your tastes have changed, the things you'd really like to do, and society's moved on, technology's moved on. So you retrain a bit, and then you go back in somewhere different. And that could be a really fulfilling multi-stage life.
it's, as you said, it sounds a very positive way of putting the issue. So thank you very much, Gus. That was fascinating.